and the recording's now started. So it's recording my voice. I found that speaking loudly in front of my laptop isn't the best sound in the world, but it's workable. You said yours wasn't.
It was okay. I mean, it wasn't that they couldn't hear it, but it just wasn't great quality.
Okay.
When I purchased the headphones with the mic, it improved the quality considerably.
When I stand in front of my laptop, I have no problem. When I'm walking away to do board work,
I think that was my problem.
You'll hear it fade away. So,
such a pacer.
Yeah, so I think you probably do eventually want to go to something that you wear that you mic yourself. That's easy to set up, because the other important thing about all of this, it needs to be easy. If it's not easy and it's cumbersome, you're going to do it once or twice, you're never going to want to do it again. So it needs to be really easy. I would say my setup takes me no more than a minute. It adds a minute to my setup for a class to get ready to get my podcast. So minimal setup.
Okay.
If you don't have one, I use a presenter, so I don't have to. And if you hit your keys, that will be very loud on the podcast. So it's much nicer to have an advancer that doesn't make noise. There's this click, click, and that gets a little annoying.
Where'd you get that?
I bought this online from MacMall, I think. It's a Kangaroo, K-A-N-G-U-R-U.
You can buy it at Best Buy, too.
Best Buy. I looked into them, and this seemed to be the nicest one, and I really like it. It has a, you can move the mouse with it, which I don't use very much. It has a built-in laser pointer. You can advance your slides. And you can change volume and things like that. So, yeah, I really like this one. There's a USB plug-in on the laptop, and that's how it communicates. And the range is fine. I never walk too far away that it doesn't work. Okay. You have to replace the battery once every year and a half or so. I found out. I'm going to stop working. So this is what I want to show you. Podcasting, which is also called course casting if it's done in education. But most people are calling it podcasting. I'll give you the what is it, the why do it briefly, and then a little bit of time on how to do it and show you what solutions I've come up with. And like I said, a lot of the software I'm using is Mac specific, so you'll see a bunch of Mac stuff strewn about. What is it? We can give you the Wikipedia definition, and I'll just read through it briefly to give you the highlights here. A podcast is a multimedia file. It can be audio, video, it could be a PowerPoint presentation, it could be anything. It is distributed by subscription, paid or unpaid, over the internet using syndication feeds. We'll talk about what that means. For playback on mobile devices and personal computers, iPods or personal computers. Like radio, it can mean both the content and the method of broadcast. So the file you download might be referred to as a podcast, or the entire project or process may be referred to as podcasting. The latter may also be termed podcasting. The host or author of a podcast is often called a podcaster. The podcaster's websites may also offer direct download or streaming of their content. A podcast is distinguished from other digital audio formats by its ability to be downloaded automatically using software capable of reading feed formats such as RSS. The last paragraph is the true power of podcasting. I can make a presentation here. I can post it to my webpage. A student can go to my webpage and click on it and download this M4A file, which will play in QuickTime or iTunes, I think Windows Media Player. But what you really want to do is get your students to subscribe to the podcast, say with iTunes, and every time you post a new lecture or whatever content you post, iTunes downloads it automatically. Most students like to get them individually, I found, but if you can get them to subscribe, it's nice and easy, and I think that's the real benefit of podcasting. And I'll show you how that process works, too. This RSS, this logo here, some of you maybe have come across this. It's a little bit of code that is written that allows iTunes to see, there's a new lecture to download, and so I'm going to grab it. And that's all that is, and I'll show you how that works. To show this all graphically, you record it, you put it on the web, and someone's computer downloads it so they can listen to it. And the best thing to do is to automate as much of this as possible. iTunes automates this part. iTunes looks for you and downloads any new content whenever you hit the refresh button. So that's how the student automates their side of it. You automate your side of it by using software that does most of the work for you. And the software I'm using today, which is called Profcast, and I'll show that to you, which is a Mac-only program, although there are Windows ones as well, is recording it for me. It can write the RSS code that iTunes reads, and it can send it up to the web page all by clicking a couple of buttons. You don't have to do any of that work. It's simplicity. You want to make this simple if you're going to do it.
I don't know if you know the answer to this question, but Windows ones, will they also be captured by iPod? I mean, if somebody has a Mac, I mean, mm-hmm. run into that?
With the Windows.
Well, I mean, so you, since I got a Windows-based machine, if I record this, will a Macintosh have problems?
No. It depends on what the file format is. But if these things are being recorded, MP3s aren't a problem. And I'll show you the difference between MP3 format and something called M4A format, which is enhanced podcasts. And they should be the cross-platform issues. I don't think will be a problem. They shouldn't be a problem.
You said the little thing you have there, you can use a laser pointer or a mouse. If you were recording and you used the mouse version, does it record that also?
No. No, this is the software I'm using doesn't record that. Where is it? If the mouse popped up, it wouldn't record that.
Okay.
And it doesn't record animations or builds within the PowerPoint slides. It doesn't record that either. The Windows platforms, I have some of the names. I don't know if they show builds or not. My guess is they don't, but they might. So any animations you would have on your slide are not captured. And I think the point is, this isn't a replacement for the presentation. This is a review tool for the presentation. And I've definitely found, I can think of one exception. I have not had students stop coming to class because I podcasted, with one exception I can think of, and he was a slacker anyway. It was an excuse not to clone. Everyone else, they come to the lectures and they love and they really like the podcasts, and so they don't care if the builds are there. They saw the build in class. They just want to hear the audio, maybe see some of the text, right? And so that's what they care about. I've just come up with four reasons for why I'm doing this, and later in the session, I hope that you can add to this list. Actually, when we work with the wikis. The main thing I use it for is to post lectures on the web so students can review that material. And because I'm doing these enhanced podcasts, students can move from slide to whatever slide they want and hear that portion of audio. So if they were confused about slide 12's portion of the lecture, they go right to that. They don't have to fast forward through all the audio. Okay? And that's the beauty of an enhanced podcast. And I'll show you the difference. So I've been using it primarily for students to review lecture material. I also assign a lot of podcasts for students to listen to produced by other people that they have to listen to before coming to class, and then we'll use them in group discussions. And that audio content, I think, has been very good. Instead of just assigning reading all the time, I assign quite a bit of audio content. Students seem to... You come in and you ask them questions, and they seem to have gotten everything, and they really soak it in really well. So that's been really successful. I like that. We haven't done this much in biology yet, but I want to start. When we have guest lectures come, I like to record those and have a podcast page for guest lectures in the department if they come from other universities. And something I also have not done, when students give their own presentations, it would be nice to podcast them. Because when you start podcasting yourself and you sit and listen to yourself lecture, I've caught quirks that I found annoying that I've tried to work on. And that's be helpful for students, too. So most of this is going to be the how do you do it, once again with a Mac angle. But let me run you through some of the steps here. The simplest way to podcast, your basic podcast, would be simply to record audio, no slides, just audio. So you may give your PowerPoint presentation, but you just want to record your speech. People for doing this have been using their iPods as recorders, because you can buy recorder units, pop in your iPod. And we saw when Howard Walters was in that podcasting section, he drops it in his pocket, microphone's right here, and that's it, and he's done. So record your audio, write your RSS, which is that code that iTunes can read, post that to the server, publish that, and I'll show you what that means. That makes it easier for people to find the content, and then let people know where it is, distribute it so they can get it. What's a little less simple, but still not too bad, is the enhanced podcast, which is everything else, the same except this one step, inserting chapter headings and images. And what I'm making now is an enhanced podcast, but this program's doing it for me automatically. It's linking up my audio with each slide. So you can just do audio recording, or you can get the software that does these enhanced podcasts, and that's the difference. If all you're interested in doing is recording audio and you don't record it from an iPod, you want to record it from your laptop, download Audacity. Audacity is one of the most widely used free programs. Feel free to write this stuff down, but it's all going to be online. So all these names with web links will all be accessible to you. All these software images in the PowerPoint are web linked as well. So if you download the slides, you can click on these images and go directly to their website.
Mason, do I understand correctly that when you do the enhanced podcast, that allows presentation on a video iPod so that students hear the audio and they see the slide.
Yes. So you could watch that on your computer or on your iPod. Uh-huh. And if it's a video iPod, you would see the slides. If it's a non-video iPod, if it's a non-video, you need an iPhone then. If it's a non-video iPod, you would just get the audio.
Yeah.
Right.
But
now,
it doesn't interfere. I have just an audio iPod.
It doesn't interfere. What you'll see when you see the progress bar on your iPod, you'll see all these lines on it, and those are the different chapters. And I think there is a way on an iPod to hop from chapter to chapter, but I'm not sure. I listen to it in my car, so I'm usually not hopping from chapter to chapter. I'm just listening to the whole thing. But now, if you're using something like Profcast, and you do have a link to a web page that you want to show students, you can click on that. Profcast is still recording me. It's not going to show the website. It's going to continue showing that one slide. And Profcast is asking me if I'm done recording, which I'm not. And there's the slide, or there's the web page. So I can show students this web page, still giving my presentation, and then hop back to my presentation. And I've been recorded all that time. You can pause recordings whenever you want, start them back up again. So this would be a simple free audio recording software. Now, writing your RSS file, Mozilla, the people who designed Firefox, came up with this logo, which has sort of become the standard. You also might see a little orange XML, and that's the symbol for this code that aggregators like iTunes read to pull down your content. You can type these in by hand, which if you get a little basic one, you can then change things from podcast to podcast. But a lot of these programs do it for you, so you should never really have to type any of this. RSS stands for really simple syndication, which is just the way to, this goes on a server on the web, and then everyone's iTunes can read this and say, ah, there's a new episode, pull it down. So you need to do this or get a program that does this. And then you need to post this to a server. Right now, Ashland's firewall doesn't allow iTunes to come in and grab podcasts. So the first semester I did this, I put them all on my Ashland server because it's free and we all have space on there. They even bumped up my space so I could fit all these nice podcasts on there. And then no one's iTunes would work. And that's because the firewall blocked them out. They spent last summer trying to fix that, and they couldn't. So I went ahead and got my own domain name and my own host, which cost me about $90 a year. And that's how I host all my podcasts. And now people's iTunes can come and grab them. IT knows about this, and Curtis White agreed with me that it's not great marketing for the university to have every faculty member be, soandso.com as opposed to ashland.edu/mposner. They'd rather see the Ashland there. So I think they're working on this. But as of now, I think this is still an issue.
I've posted some audio on WebCT.
Mm-hmm.
This is an MP3 file.
Right.
I guess it's a solution.
Well, I mean, you can go in there individually. So students could go to my website and download the MP3 individually, but they couldn't use these aggregators like iTunes. So they couldn't automate their end of the process. Yeah. You also can't post to the Ashland servers off campus, and I commute from Medina. So I needed a solution I could work with at home. So I use Bluehost, but I know you still use GoDaddy, Deanna?
No, actually,
iPower Web. I mean, there are tons of them out there, and they're all relatively inexpensive. And the domain name is free, when you sign up. So that's the
question.
One.
Could like a department get a site like this at Bluehost, and then you could click into the various professors in the department, or no?
Yeah, I mean, you can have one of these hosts and then have multiple domain names, or just have one domain name and
Department of Nursing.
Right. Once again, I think in the long run, IT does not want to see people do that. And so I think if you go to them and say, hey, we're going to do this unless you allow us to pull content off the servers using iTunes or another program like that, I imagine they're going to get the ball rolling to make that possible. The last thing they want is for everybody to have their own domain name. That's not good for the university.
I think the need is out there. We just don't know how to communicate. And there's only a couple of us doing it.
We need to support the infrastructure.
It has to be accessible from home, too.
Yes.
We can't have to come sometimes I'm in Medina too, and I'm in Cleveland.
Yeah, they need to change their infrastructure, and it's possible. We just need to say it's time to change. So.
Yeah.
And in the meantime,
one possible solution, we have an application in to be an iTunes U. If you haven't seen this program, this is run by Apple, where you have this site on Apple server space where you post all of your podcasts, and then you have a iTunes interface. So students go into iTunes, and they go to Ashland on iTunes, and they basically pull down podcasts, subscribe to podcasts through iTunes off the Apple server, and that would solve this whole problem. And that may be what IT is waiting for, but they don't have an estimate of how long that would take. But we do have an application in, and then that would be a host for all the podcasts, and that would be a great solution. To get your files onto the server, you need an FTP client. So FTP is the technology that takes your podcast and puts it on the server out in the web somewhere. If you use a Mac and you don't have it already, I'd recommend Fetch. Fetch is free for educational users. You don't pay anything. It's a really nice FTP client. I don't know as much about the Windows clients, but Smart FTP came up first on Google searches. So unless they hired someone to get them up there, apparently that's an access one. That one looked like it was free trial. You may have to pay eventually. I'm not sure. I don't know that much about the Windows FTP options.
FTP Navigate is free and pretty.
FTP Navigate. Okay. Something to add to the wiki.
You do have to pay for Smart FTP beyond a certain. I do it with the journal that I work for.
And you have to pay after the trial.
What I have to do is go in. It's a small, low budget event, so I have to go in and do it.
Right. Right. Okay. Okay. All right. So if you put this all together now, the pieces, you have to record your audio or enhanced podcast. You have to write the RSS code. You have to FTP it up to the website. Students then need an aggregator. So programs like iTunes or Juice are called aggregators. They read the RSS code and then know to download new files, and then they pop on the computer. So if you subscribe to a podcast, you're simply doing this part here. So for the students, it's very simple. For us, the individual parts look terrible unless you have a program that does everything for you. And I'll show you those programs in a second. Oh. Another step that you don't have to do, but I found it helpful, is something called publishing an RSS feed. Okay. What that means, and I use this service called FeedBurner. It's free. It's a free service. What FeedBurner does is when you log in and you sign up for the service, FeedBurner is directed to the web address of your RSS feed. You tell it where your RSS file lives on the web. FeedBurner reads that, which looks terrible, and turns it into this automatically. FeedBurner then lists every episode in your podcast. You can only see the first one here. Shows when it's posted, gives a title. This is the description that I typed in. And the RSS feed is being read by FeedBurner. And every time I upload a new podcast episode, FeedBurner will see that there and add it to this web page. So instead of you having to keep a web page up to date with all your podcasts, this service does it for you for free. So if you haven't played with FeedBurner, it's great. The other great thing that FeedBurner does is it has one-click subscription buttons. So if you send a student to this website and they want to subscribe to this podcast, all they have to do is click the Add to iTunes button, and that subscribes them. Otherwise, and I tried this at first, you had to get them to paste this address into an advanced window option in iTunes, and as students are not tech savvy, no one could find it and no one could subscribe. So now, if they get to this page and they click that one button, they're subscribed, it's all done. And if they want to use other programs like Juice or some of these others and not iTunes, they can subscribe just by clicking this button as well. Does that make sense? For me, FeedBurner didn't make a lot of sense until I actually tried it. But it takes your RSS feed, turns it into this nice graphic interface, allows students to download files individually if they want to, or subscribe to the entire thing. Okay. And now all you have to do is point students to your FeedBurner page. And this was the course web page for my human biology class. I use a Mac-only program called RapidWeaver, which is the simplest, I think, the simplest, nicest web page design program. Once again, it doesn't work for Windows, only works for Mac, but very, very easy to use. It costs, I think it's about $30 now. So they come with all these nice templates. So I use RapidWeaver to make the web page. First day of class, I show students the page. This was a podcast on cricket noise making I had them listen to, and we had a group discussion about that. One of the Zoomerang surveys I had them use was posted here. Deanna, the live classroom review sessions, this was the link to get into one of those. And then they have assignments. So that's the type of things I use the webpage for. But if they click on the slideshows and podcast button, it takes them here, and they can subscribe to the podcast. So once again, you just want to make it as simple as possible for the students so they don't have any technical issues and then ditch the whole process. Okay. This is what it looks like. How many of you use iTunes? Okay. Yeah, oh, yeah.
I use Juice because I'm a PC user. I have a lot of trouble with that.
Really?
So.
And you like Juice?
I have to use another program to upload it to my iPod.
Right.
So I pay $25 per annum by Explorer.
Okay, to get interesting. And iTunes has been buggy on Windows?
Yes.
Okay, interesting. Have you used, interesting. But when you do subscribe to these and you go to the podcast section in iTunes, you'll see all your podcasts. So these were all of the lectures from my human biology course, some downloaded, some not. And when you click on them, it comes up with a little description of what's in that episode, and then you can play them. So let me show you what the podcast actually looks like. So this was the introductory lecture for one of my human biology classes. And, one thing I forget to do. And, of course, because I'm not teaching all summer, I don't have it with me. I'm going to have to crank up my speaker. You might not hear this, unfortunately. I didn't bring my jack for the speakers.
Welcome to Human Biology, Biology 100.
You can't hear that, can you?
My name is Dr. Mason Posner.
We can maybe get through one slide transition.
So
what they see when they download that file and it's a QuickTime is the slides, they hear the audio, and then they'll go to the slide transition. And I'll go ahead and wait and show you the one that we're doing right now as an example. Other cool thing about FeedBurner, it'll give you statistics on who's downloading, how many people are downloading your podcast. So when you go to each of your feeds, say your human biology feed in my case, it shows how many people have subscribed. This was early on in December 9th. This was at the end of the semester. Not many people subscribed. They downloaded individual episodes. But you can see each day how many episodes are being downloaded. So you get some statistics with it. So I use Zoomerang to ask students before the class and after the class what they thought of these technologies. And I asked them, like I asked you, how many download content from the web, how many subscribe to podcasts, and how many would like to have this. And a little less than half the class strongly agree they like to have these audio recordings. So if you sort of look at that 40, 20, 32, at the end of the semester, I got the availability of lecture podcasts helped me to learn the material. You know, more than half the class strongly agreed with that. A little more than half the class did download. Not many people subscribe. Once again, they don't tend to subscribe. They tend to download them individually, is what I've been finding. Okay. So, to automate this whole process, what you really want is podcast production software. And I've been using this program called ProfCast, which has a couple nice features. It produces these enhanced podcasts with chapter headings. You can export the raw material to GarageBand if you want to edit it further, which I don't do because I don't have the time to do that. So when I'm done with a lecture, the podcast I have just goes right on the web, and that's it. But if I wanted to go in there and add a nice jingle to the beginning, if I had theme music, maybe I need to get someone to write me some theme music. I could put that at the front. You could do, you know, all the stuff that GarageBand does, you could add that to your podcast if you wanted to. And once again, that's Mac only as well. ProfCast also allows you to add hyperlinks to these enhanced podcast files. So if you put a URL down here at the bottom with a title below it, when you look at it in QuickTime, for example, the podcast, it'll show the title, Profcast website, and then it's a hyperlink. Click on it in QuickTime or iTunes, and you go to the web page. So that's a nice feature. Only one hyperlink per slide. And you already saw this interface, what it looks like. Okay. That's sort of it for the process. I'm going to show you as I finish this podcast what it looks like when I'm done. But are there any questions about Andy's bits? And it was a lot to throw at you, and it's, we'll get to that. You don't really understand this until you do it. I'm just trying to give you a flavor for what's involved.
How do you protect what you say on there from, say, a student taking it and recording it and giving it to somebody?
Right, so that's an issue. The way I have them posted on my server, they need a password to get to them. And at the beginning of the semester, I give everybody the password. Of course, they give that password to anyone they wanted. So they could take that content. And legally, so I published mine with the Creative, what's the CC license? The free use license, which
Creative
is actually
posted.
Yeah, say it again.
Creative Commons.
So I licensed it with a Creative Commons copyright. And so technically what that means is they can use it for whatever they want as long as they don't make any money off of it. But that's something to think about. For anyone podcasting, once you put it up there, you figure anyone can grab it. So that's definitely something to think about. Yeah. Now, if it makes you any more comfortable, a lot of people are doing this. So if you look at major universities, I just brought two examples. Penn State has been pretty on the leading edge for podcasting. And they have a nice how to get started with podcasting page on their webpage. Once again, you don't have to be part of the Penn State community or in one of these classes to listen to any of these podcasts. So the trend is just to put it out there. But if that's something to think about, that it is out there and anybody can download it and use it. Sure. And here's another one. I gave you two examples. University of Virginia, and there's their, here it is. Start podcasting now. So they have guides on how to do this as well. If you're really interested in doing this, these are my suggestions based on my experience. Download some podcast production software that writes your RSS and does the FTP for you. So you just don't have to deal with any of that. So download one piece of software that does it all, whether that's Profcast or a Windows version. I'll show you some of those. For now, you're going to have to get a host until AU allows iTunes and other things to pull off their servers, or allows FTP access, or until we become an iTunes U. So at this point, you'll probably need to get your own web host and domain name. Start with one class. I started with one class and did the second half of the semester and figured if it doesn't work, it's not that big a deal, but I'll at least try it and use the students as guinea pigs and try a few lectures and just be prepared for it to soak up some time at the beginning. And take advantage of the resources. So faculty who are already podcasting, and then the next half of this session, the AU Wiki and the podcasting site on the AU Wiki. You know, take advantage of these resources because I don't think we're going to get a whole lot of IT support right off the bat for doing this kind of stuff. Okay. So let me show you what happens when this is done. So there's my last slide. Let me allow you to see my desktop again.
How big is a typical file?
15 megabytes. Yeah, and we'll see how big this one is when it's done. So it's like Profcast is asking me if I'm done, and I...